The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
All of these financial institutions, they buy politicians.
Let me tell you, it's not the who's the president. It's who's controlling the wallet. So it's the...
And who's that?
The hedge funds, BlackRock, the banks. These guys are campaign financing. Yep, you can buy your candidates. Obviously, we have the system in place. I can give you 500K right now. No questions asked.
Yeah.
Identity is done.
Does, like, everybody do that? Does BlackRock do that?
It doesn't matter who wins.
You're so right.
They're my popularest one.
Well, hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. We're coming to you live from our beautiful, sunny campus in Edstone, England. I don't know if you could ask for better weather. We're having warm sunshine, but not too hot. Rain a couple of times a week so things don't dry out. So coming to you from a very beautiful campus. And that was the latest from the O'Keefe Media Group, previously Project Veritas, the video that they released, I think either this morning or late last night. And they're interviewing there or secretly recording someone from BlackRock, a recruiter there. And as is so common these days, there's a lot of profanity in the video. So there was a fair bit we couldn't play you, but we were still able to piece together enough for you to be able to see the gist of what he was talking about. Politicians for sale. He talks about how somewhere else, he's like, senators are cheap. You can buy a senator for $10,000. He talked about how everyone, you know, big businesses use campaign finance donations and all of this. And yesterday we had the news about Hunter Biden, and Mr. Flurry talked about that on the show. These kind of charges that have been released against him, that's really just a slap on the wrist to kind of try and get rid of his crimes. Tucker Carlson had another video come out, and he basically said they're baptizing Hunter Biden. He gets pleads guilty to these things in such a way that he doesn't go to jail, there's no risk of being imprisoned. And all his sins are washed clean and forgiven after that. It's an attempt to just sweep it under the rug. But that story coming from O'Keefe Media Group, it's a reminder that this is not just the Bidens. There is a lot of corruption going on here. And you know, one of the things we warn about a lot here at the Trumpet is that moral decline leads to national decline. You know, there is a connection between the decline in our families and the values that we as individuals and as a community uphold and support, and then the fate of the nation and the fate of the country. And I think this story starts to present that in a very tangible way, where people kind of have no problem with a bit of lying and a bit of cheating. Well, and where does that come from? That comes from the decline in families. That comes from them not being taught those things in the home. The result is politicians that can be bought, and bankers saying, well, yeah, it's you can buy whoever you want. You know, you finance their campaign, and then you own that senator, and he'll do what you want him to do. And really, I think what also makes this important is that BlackRock is basically, I mean, BlackRock is kind of the financial arm of the Obama clique, you could say. They are very close with Barack Obama. You have Larry Fink, who's the head of BlackRock. He was one of the first people on Wall Street to start kind of backing Barack Obama, while many of his colleagues were supporting Hillary Clinton. They weren't supporting Republicans, of course. And then you kind of have this revolving door where they kind of go in and out of administration. I mean, this was for so many of Mr. Obama's kind of finance guys and his treasury guys, all of those people that didn't stay in place when Donald Trump came to power in 2016, they just went to BlackRock, most of them. and they're just kind of in and out. And so you have, Brian Deese. He was a senior advisor to President Obama. He then became a BlackRock investment executive and then National Economic Council under Joe Biden, you know, really basically going right back into an Obama administration. You had Adewale Adeyemo. He was a senior international economics advisor, then chief of staff to BlackRock's chief executive. Then he went on to become deputy treasury secretary for Joe Biden. Michael Pyle, he worked in the Obama administration, became BlackRock's global chief investment strategist, then chief economic advisor to Kamala Harris. You had about a dozen people doing this kind of circulation. And people that look at, well, who's organizing U.S. governments and things like who's influencing the U.S. government and the U.S. Treasury. You know, BlackRock has got more influence and more power there than people like Goldman and Sachs. And then it's kind of a mutually beneficial relationship. Remember, Barack Obama came to power after the 2008 financial crisis. He was responsible for making sure no one was held to account for that. No one went to jail. There were all kinds of scandals that kind of came out in the 2008 financial crisis and banks breaking the rules and things like that. And no one was punished, really. And so these banks know what's good for them. Now, I don't think there's any record of Republicans being particularly strong on regulating some of these finance guys either. There may be slightly more corruption in one direction than the other, but it's a whole society-wide problem. Just on this subject of corruption, Lee Smith had a good article on Monday. Is Joe Biden being extorted by the DOJ and everyone else too? And so again, you see this story of just how much corruption there is going on, and then it gives power to all of these other people. So Lee Smith kind of talks about how many people knew what Hunter Biden and Joe Biden were up to. You know, he points out that all of this has been known for years, that there's the DOJ, the FBI. You know, these organizations could have destroyed Joe Biden's campaign any time that they liked. And they didn't do so. You know, they had him over a barrel. It shows really who's in control. He writes, Obama himself would have been implicated by Hunter's doings. There's no doubt he was briefed on the matter, but also failed to persuade his vice president to cut it out. More likely, he never said anything about it to his number two. You know, it's absolutely inconceivable that Mr. Obama had no idea what was going on. He knew when he made Joe Biden kind of the... He gave the Ukraine responsibility to him when Joe Biden was vice president. You know, he knew about all of this corruption, and that gives him a rock-solid control over Joe Biden's presidency. Lee Smith writes, here's a running count of all the government agencies that were aware of the Biden's Ukraine-related activities by the time Trump came to the White House. The DOJ, FBI, CIA, State Department, Biden aides from the VP's office, the former president of the United States. To put it another way, if a mid-level bureaucrat like Vindman, detailed to the NSC staff from the Pentagon, knew that questions Trump was asking were likely to prove dangerous for the former vice president, then virtually the entire national security apparatus knew about the Bidens. The Treasury Department certainly knew about Hunter Biden's financial arrangement with foreign powers. Treasury provided Grassley and his Senate colleague Ron Johnson with a suspicious activity report used to compile their September 2020 report, Hunter Biden, Burisma, and Corruption, the impact on U.S. government policy and related concerns. They all knew. They all knew exactly what was happening. Lee Smith kind of goes on to speculate maybe this is why Joe Biden didn't run for president in 2016. That Hillary Clinton, from being Secretary of State under Barack Obama, she knew all of this dirt, and that she blackmailed him to sit it out. No, this is my turn. If you run, then I'll expose all of this dodgy dealings. So there's a lot of corruption in the Biden crime family. But like that BlackRock story brings out, it's not unique to that Biden crime family. And it's a critical part of the warning message of what is happening in the United States. So Daniel, and all the nations of Israel, really. Daniel chapter 8 and verse 12 talks about Satan and his demon army being able to triumph. We can read the whole thing quickly, if I can find it quickly. And why somebody, why, Why are you able to have someone like Barack Obama get in power and just dismantle so much of what is good or powerful about the United States? And it says, and a host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of transgression. And it cast the truth to the ground, and it prospered. You know, this passage is talking about evil being able to triumph by reason of transgression. Now, the Bible is very clear that there's a real spirit world, and that there's a Satan, the devil, who is opposed to God's plan and what God is doing, and opposed to that plan being done through the descendants of Israel, you know, Judah in the Middle East, Britain and America, and a plan that's for the benefit of the whole world. And he's able to kind of cast truth down within God's church and then within the United States by reason of transgression, because people are sinning, because people are doing things wrong. They're breaking God's law. In America Under Attack, Mr. Flurry writes, a truthful, law-abiding society, even keeping man-made laws, is far more stable than a lawless one. It says, in other words, the sins of the people gave Satan his, this is a bit further down, the sins of the people gave Satan his opening. Then he went right into the sanctuary, working through the leaders at the top and casting the truth to the ground. That is how Satan destroys God's church. I watched it happen before my eyes. And he goes on to say, now Satan and his mighty army of demons are destroying the superpower of end-time Israel the same way. The values that helped to make America great are being cast to the ground from the top. And why? This is the part that many people overlook or reject. It is by reason of transgression. Because there is so much sin within the people. This is not merely a problem of one man at the top with a lawless spirit. He would never have achieved the heights of power if not for a massive crisis of law-breaking throughout the nation. Our people are saturated in sin of every imaginable type and proud of it. There are consequences for such lawlessness. This is a clear principle spelled out in the Bible from beginning to end. This is why God punishes us with such a devastating curse. Many people pray for God to protect us from this satanic attack, but those prayers are not being answered because of our sins. Now, that's a powerful point. Could you have somebody come to power like Barack Obama and do all of these things that actively hurt America if you had a noble and law-abiding ruling class? Well, absolutely not. But so much of the power comes from a lot of this corruption and people being able to buy politicians and having dirt on each other. And then could you have a completely corrupt, lawless class if you had a law-abiding, God-fearing overall society? Well, again, no, you wouldn't. It all happens by reason of transgression. Mr. Flurry writes in that book, the solution to these problems is to reject satanic lawlessness. It is to exalt truth and refuse to allow it to be cast down to the ground. The solution is repentance. Or that's my words. But Mr. Flurry writes, the solution is to exalt truth and refuse to allow it to cast truth to the ground. You know, the solution is repentance. It's to get back to truth and it's to get back to law. It means getting away from lawlessness. And it means getting back to God's law. And even the so-called Christian churches of this world. And conservatives and people on the right, they're not exalting God's law. So many of them are teaching, well, God's law's done away. You don't need to worry about the law. But it's God's law that frees us from sin, and it's God's law that allows us to be protected from these kind of attacks. You know, we have, you know, America Under Attack is, if you've not read that, you know, go order that book, read that free book. We're very happy to send that to you. It exposes exactly what is happening in America. But we had another book decades before, well, not decades, I guess, but years before, maybe a decade or two before even the first version of America Under Attack came out, that previews in so many ways a lot of what is in there. You know, there's specific revelation and specific truth in America Under Attack that isn't in this book, but there's a lot of general principles, and that's called No Freedom Without Law. And it just talks about, gets to this point of, well, you get away from God's law, and you get away from the truth, and it's going to bring down the nation. It's basic cause and effect. And so the solution is to get back to God's law. So you can get both of those books at our website, thetrumpet.com. We have our free phone number as well, 1-866-930-3024. We're very happy to send you both of those. I also wanted to move on and give you a bit of an update on some European news as well. last time I was on this show, I was talking about what was going on, what was going right in Europe and within Germany. I'd kind of just gotten back from visiting Germany and Switzerland and, you know, talked about the big contrast I was seeing with the stories about lawlessness and theft and the cities falling apart in America and, you know, what I was seeing traveling around Europe. And you can really see Europe rising while America falls. But I wanted to talk maybe a bit about the other side of the coin for a few minutes today, because there are a lot of major problems in Europe too. That in certain areas, Europe sees themselves going in the same direction as America. They don't like it. It's prompting a real push for urgent change. So I'll start by sharing a video that's been spreading on French social media. It's really done the rounds there. It's silent, so if you're listening, then you know, you're not going to get much from it, I'm afraid. I might describe some of what's happening there. We got a version, I think, that's been kind of blurred a bit by the Daily Mail just to protect the you know, the identity, the modesty of some of the victims here. But it was a pretty horrific attempted kidnapping in broad daylight from somebody's home in France. You can roll the clip. So you've got, it's actually a grandmother and her granddaughter, and all of this is kind of going through, it's been going through a court this week, and you can see a guy there walks up to the door, gets his foot in the door, and then just kind of launches inside, grabs the grandmother and her daughter, throws them to the ground, grabs the daughter, starts trying to run off with her, and then, you know, thankfully you get a dog come along and he's kind of scared off by the dog barking. I think there's a bus as well, but in court they talked about the dog scaring him away. And quite understandably, that video has gained a whole lot of traction in France. It's a pretty horrific, you know, it's a pretty horrific picture that you can have this situation where people are comfortable just trying to snatch someone out of their house. That was in Bordeaux. I don't even think it was kind of in a particularly bad area. You look at the context that this is happening in. It was just a few weeks ago, you had a Syrian refugee carry out a mass stabbing at a children's playground. The police haven't mentioned the background of that individual that we saw on there. And so, of course, well, that kind of leads you to think he probably was a refugee or something like that. And so that's caused a whole lot of concern within France at what is happening. And you've got a lot of politicians on the right that are talking about this. The leader of National Rally, or one of the figureheads, Marine Le Pen, she said these attacks are daily, and the insecurity aggravated by the migratory chaos is becoming endemic. How many videos like this are needed before the authorities react? You had another politician, Eric Zemmour. What a horror. Bordeaux today, this is what they've done to our country. The French, wake up. And then you had a right-wing Republicans leader, Eric Coutouille. The French are going to correct me on that. It's their fault for making their language rules so complicated. This major repeat offender should be in prison. Which I don't think people I'm certainly not going to argue with that, but he is someone known to the authorities. And French politics is changing. This is even not affected by that video, but there was a study recently released showing that 4 out of 10 voters want to see Le Pen as France's next president, this National Front leader who is kind of generally known to be, I mean, she gets called far right. The National Front gets called far right by the press. It's one of those ones where far right, far left kind of meet. A lot of their policies are kind of pretty socialist as well, but they're certainly very nationalist, and it's a different direction for France. Somebody who, a voter that has, or a leader that's usually be considered completely unacceptable, because it's very different from the kind of liberal, tolerant, multiculturalist France that you have. You know, she's really rising in the polls. 42% said that they would vote for somebody associated with her party. Previously, that would be like 10, 5, maybe 20%. You know, they've struggled to gain any support. And meanwhile, Emmanuel Macron was becoming increasingly unpopular because of this kind of thing. 55% of the vote said that, or they indicated he would lose by 55% if he ran for president. One MP from the Renaissance Party in France, Jacqueline Marquet, she said, "I have the impression of a tsunami advancing." You know, a tsunami against Macron and before the National Front. His approval, it's coming to new lows. Last week, 63% said France's immigration laws are too lax. I mean, after this video, how much more are people going to say that? And then you're seeing a similar trend within Germany today as well. Sam sent me this from the New York Times yesterday. The title is, "As German anxieties about the future rise, far-right party profits." As Germans get more and more worried about the future, they're turning to some of these parties that were previously considered unacceptable. They kind of profile a woman on the street in this article, and they quote her saying, "What's wrong? Where do I start? She feels unsafe with migration rising. She's uncomfortable with Germany providing weapons to Ukraine. She is exasperated by government squabbling over climate plans. She fears will cost citizens like her their modest but comfortable way of life. I can't say now if I would ever vote for the AfD," she said, "but I am listening." And so you've got a party here, the Alternative for Deutschland, that was once, basically, I mean, you were kind of a Nazi sympathizer if you voted for the AfD, and that was their core support. But just like the National Front in France, there are real genuine concerns and problems that these other parties just aren't speaking to. Or if they speak about them, they have a long track record of not doing anything about them, and so nobody believes their words. And so you've got all of these problems that aren't being dealt with. You know, yes, there's still a lot that's nice, and there are some directions where you can see Europe rising. But there are these major problems on the horizon, and people absolutely are concerned by things like immigration. You know, when you see videos like that one coming out of France, you would be mad not to be worried about migration. And some of these stories about Syrian migrants coming in and stabbing children in a playground. I mean, if you were not concerned about some of these stories, there'd be something wrong with you. And they're looking around and it's like, well, who can I vote for? And really, the only parties that seem like they've got any kind of credible position on these issues are, you know, like the National Rally, or formerly the National Front in France, and the Alternative for Deutschland. But these parties come with serious, serious problems. You know, the National Rally in France has it's got some pretty far left policies. It's a pretty anti-American party. You go back and it had some major problems with anti-Semitism, which they've kind of tried to purge a bit from the party. Then you look at the Alternative for Deutschland, the domestic intelligence head within Germany. He said that of the 28,500 AfD members, they believed about 10,000 to be extremist. They had somebody else talking about how, now you've reached the point where one third of Germans view this as a normal democratic party. But he says the paradox is that at the same time, it has become more and more clear that this is really a radical party, if not an extremist party. And so you do have this situation where the party is kind of mainstream, and more and more people are voting for it. Well, at the same time, it's actually becoming more and more extreme. And I had a trumpet brief that I wrote on this last week on, you know, some of these stats, some of these leaders. Like, basically, you would have AfD leaders say things that people would be absolutely outraged at 5 years ago. And they would say, look, Germany has a glorious history. We need to stop being ashamed for our history. We need to stop building Holocaust memorials. You know, forget about those 12 years around World War II and Hitler. Forget about that. Everything else is fantastic. We need to be proud of Germany. We need to make Germany great again. And Germans themselves, 5 years ago, you would have a lot be horrified by that and a lot be outraged. And now these leaders are saying exactly the same thing. Nobody cares. Not a big deal. You had leaders, this article, the New York Times one, I talked about him as well. I think it was Bjorn Höcke, who was kind of this extreme leader, even in the AfD. And you had kind of moderates within the Alternative for Deutschland 5 years ago trying to kick him out of the party. You know, they were kind of like, he's too extreme, even for us, this is hurting our image, we want rid of him. Now these same leaders, these same people that were trying to kick him out, they're walking around arm in arm with him on the stage. this party is shifting for the right and becoming more extreme, while at the same time it's being embraced by more people. There are big political shifts underway in Europe, and there are major stories underway in the United States. There's a lot of important stories to focus on there. But don't overlook what's happening over in Europe. There's going to be earth-shaking ramifications from this political shift as Europe kind of sours, you know, the kind of the liberal, multicultural Europe that's a bit useless that we make fun of, or at least I make fun of. It's pretty easy to make fun of. That's obsolete. That's a thing of the past. That is not going to stick around. And we're watching that transformation happen right now. And the Bible has a lot of prophecies about this transformation. You can look over, we have our free booklet, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. And that talks about exactly what is prophesied to happen in Europe, in Germany, this rise of this spirit that you saw before in World War II and much earlier. This rise of this Holy Roman Empire that Revelation chapter 17 says is going to come right back again. That's what we're watching happening before our eyes in Europe. And you're seeing even in Italy, a leader of what used to be Mussolini's party, basically. It's the successor, the descendant of Mussolini's party running the show in Italy. These are major, major developments. So keep watching that. And like I said, if you want to know more, we have our free booklet, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. Well, there's one final news story I wanted to talk a little bit about before we get into have a break and get into kind of our Bible segment. Here is a genuine headline from The Telegraph this morning. So this is from the UK. It says, "School that allowed child to identify as cat faces government investigation." It is bonkers. This is an absolutely insane news story that's kind of blown up this week. So you had it's a Church of England school. So this is Episcopalian, a Christian school. And you had a couple of girls get into an argument. One girl claimed that she was a cat. A couple of other girls said the obvious thing, "You're not a cat. That's crazy." And The girls that said, "You are not a cat," they got into trouble. And they got a big telling off from a teacher. And one of them had the presence of mind to record it, giving us a bit of a glimpse to what is going on with these schools. And here are some excerpts from this telling off that the teacher gave these girls for telling another girl, "You're not a cat."
"How dare you? You just really upset someone. Saying things like, should be in an asylum."
I didn't say that. I just said if they want to identify as a cat or something, then they're like genuinely unwell.
Then they've gone.
Yeah, they're to be crazy.
You were questioning their identity.
No, I wasn't a question. I was just saying about the gender. I didn't say anything about them.
But where did you get this idea from, as only two genders?
I just think it's my opinion.
That is my opinion.
If I respect their opinion, can't they respect my opinion?
It is not an opinion.
Yes, it is.
It's not an opinion. It's only
two genders. You've got those genes.
How you identify. How you identify. It's not an opinion.
Yes, it is.
Yes,
it is.
No, it's not. And if you don't like it, you need to go to a different school. So
I'm
reporting you to Miss Willis. You need to have a proper educational conversation about equality, diversity, and inclusion. Because I'm not having that expressed in my lesson.
She called them despicable. You know, they're having this lesson on transgenderism or whatever, and some girl says, "I'm a cat," and they question that. And this teacher's like, "Well, you're despicable for believing that there are only two genders." I mean, even these two girls, I mean, they've imbued a lot. I mean, good for them for standing up, first of all. I mean, let's make that clear. You know, good for them. But even so, they've still bought into more of it, to some of this ideology. I mean, they're like, "There are two genders. That's my opinion." I mean, that's not an opinion. That's fact. I mean, it's not the girls' fault that they've bought into some of this ideology. They've been kind of brainwashed into it. But, you know, so even there, they've kind of imbued some of these ideas. And then the teacher's like, "Well, that's not an opinion you can have in this school. That's not an opinion you're allowed. You've got to accept that there are hundreds of different genders." And she kind of goes on and talks about that and basically says, well, yeah, she you know, like, this is established fact that there are hundreds of genders. You're not allowed to believe anything differently. You've got to go to re-education. You kind of heard at the end there. If you believe that there are, if you're going to insist that there are two genders, we're going to have to send you off somewhere to be re-educated. It's crazy. And that's what's going on at schools up and down in the UK. I mean, there was another clip that came out today. It wasn't quite as dramatic, but someone was getting a telling off for saying the same thing. It was a boy this time. He said, well, now I believe there are two genders. I think that was it. It was like there was some web form that they were signing up to in class, and the form asked, are you male or female? And the teacher made some kind of comment like, well, they should have more options than that. They shouldn't just be limiting people to male or female. And the student pushed back. And he was sent out of class and got a telling off. And then you start to get this is another Telegraph headline. This is from yesterday. Schools let children identify as horses, dinosaurs, and a moon. If you don't believe me, it's on the screen. Like, I don't know. I don't think I'd believe it if someone told me that was a genuine headline from a UK newspaper. We have gone far beyond. Like, it's. Even transgenderism is kind of tame now. Now it's transspeciesism. You can identify as a moon. It says from this article, the Telegraph has discovered that a pupil at a secondary school in the Southwest is insisting on being addressed as a dinosaur. Another secondary school, so that's like high school or middle school in England, a pupil insists on identifying as a horse. Another wears a cape and wants to be acknowledged as a moon. I suspect some of these are just doing this for the laughs, and I kind of feel like good for them. Just making fun of this while I can identify as whatever I want movement. But you read some of the stories, you read more on this story, and it's also plain there are plenty of people that are serious about this. Going on here, stories about children self-identifying as animals, sometimes referred to as furries, have been circulating for some time. Some of them, such as tales of schools providing litter trays to cater for children identifying cats, have turned out to be hoaxes, which has made it all too easy to assume the problem is either a myth or widely exaggerated. But it's not difficult to find genuine examples of children in UK schools insisted on being addressed as animals, raising two important questions: what is happening and how teachers should respond. I don't think those are the most important questions. How teachers should respond, I mean, okay, I guess, but... I mean, what in the world has been going on with our schools, I think, is the burning question here. How is it where that's the bizarre question? I'll just read a little more from this article. One pupil at a state school in Wales told the Telegraph of a fellow pupil who, quote, feels very discriminated against if you do not refer to them as cat self. She added, when they answer a question, they meow rather than answer a question in English. And the teachers are not allowed to get annoyed about this because it's seen as discriminating. And it talks about how then the whole lesson is derailed for everybody. Because the child, you know, the teacher will ask some question, you know, what's the symbolism of this dagger in the text in Macbeth? And the pupil will meow and... then the teacher, quite understandably, is like, well, no, that's not an answer to my... You know, you can't just meow. That's not helping anybody's education. Speak proper English. And then it just completely derails the rest of the class. And so this student says, it's affecting other people and their education and everybody in their lessons. It's distracting to sit in a lesson and have someone meow to a teacher rather than English, especially at secondary school age. That's going to take a lot out of the lesson because people are going to spend the entire lesson talking about whoever it is over there meowing to the teacher. So, I mean, it's insane. And now I'm not saying this is happening in every school. I don't think it is. I think it's their extreme, absurd examples. But this is, I mean, how far have we gone where these are the extreme examples? I mean, even, you know, approval of homosexuality, approval of homosexual marriage, that's normal. That's not even controversial. You know, that even there was another part of that video clip. The girls kind of made that point. They're like, we've got no problem with homosexuality or any of those. Fine, whatever. You know, that's kind of already been accepted. And then you've gotten to the point, well, transgenderism. That's now normal in British schools. And it seems like you have many schools, most schools now maybe, where you have people in every class that are transgender. And that's now a normal part of education. You know, that just, it feels like just 2 or 3 years ago, having somebody in your class that was transgender would be the extreme, the weird, the unusual thing. But now that's normal, that's whatever, you know. And what's extreme is somebody saying, well, I'm a moon, or you must refer to me as cat self. It is really incredible how far gone our schools are. And you get this, and you know, I'm sure you have people now saying, well, my school's not weird. There's nobody in my school that identifies as a cat. You know, we've just it really warps our ideas of what is normal. Like, oh, no, it's just kind of vanilla transgenderism that's common at my school. It is, and like I said, homosexual marriage in quotes, that's all a given. Probably very hard to find people that have a problem with that, and that's just kind of being taught up and down the schools in all the countries, and that's not controversial with parents or students anymore. It shows how far society has gone. And it really shows how careful you have to be with what's being taught in schools and the responsibility of parents to protect their children. I mean, this is all, it ties back into this point about corruption. This moral decline, well, it leads to, I mean, it's all tied together. You start casting truth to the ground. You start saying, well, there is no such thing as truth, that everyone can have their own truth. And that if you say you're a woman, you're a woman. There's no objective reality there. Well, okay. Well, if you say you're a cat, and there's no objective reality there. And homosexuals can get married so that there's no laws really about marriage and there's no solid families. Well, then that leads to lawlessness and it leads to national decline. It all ties together. And this is a story, we've got a lot of articles kind of in preparation on this for our next Trumpet print edition, really exposing the evil that you see there. We have an obligation to expose the evil. I mean, those poor kids. I mean, even the kids that are standing up for the truth, they're victims. They've had their minds, they've had false concepts injected into their minds that are going to really harm them. It is really a horrific evil that's being perpetrated by society on children. And you delve into this subject in depth, and you really see why God is punishing and he's going to punish Britain and America, and why he's bringing correction for what we're doing. And you look at how strongly he feels about what we're doing to our children. Anyway, we'll take a quick break, and then I'll get into maybe a slightly more positive way of talking about this subject. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Is marriage on the way out? Is the institution of the home, with its family life, to disappear from society? How and when did the institution of marriage originate? Does it, after all, serve any necessary purpose? Why marriage, soon obsolete, takes an in-depth look at the institutions of marriage, the home and family life, and reveals a startling, even shocking truth, which has been altogether overlooked by science, by religion, by education, and by society. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We were talking about just some craziness going on in UK schools just now, but I want to start the second half with a clip. This is from Justin Trudeau at an awards ceremony recently.
Now, earlier today, for the seventh time since the very first time, I was raising the pride flag on Parliament Hill. Now, the rainbow has been a celebration, a symbol of celebration for almost half a century. When a rainbow appears in the sky, it appears as an arc, which makes me think of a quote much loved by Dr. Martin Luther King, around the arc of the moral universe being long, but bending towards justice. Which is reassuring. But the universe has a much longer time frame than we do, and I think we need to keep rolling up our sleeves to make it happen right now.
So he's talking about the rainbow flag, the symbol that the homosexual movement has adopted, and it's really, you know, you see it everywhere this time of year, and it's a sickening sign of just how widely accepted perversion is. But it's also just the rainbow symbol itself is a perversion of something that is pure and good and wonderful. And so for the Bible study section, I wanted to look a bit at God's use of this rainbow symbol, what it really means, and the positive message that it really has wrapped up in this for us today. And we'll start in Genesis chapter 6. Well, actually, Genesis 9, but just kind of summarizing some of the history in Genesis chapter 6. The book of Genesis documents the first humans, the way Adam and Eve, they rejected obedience to God. They decided to decide for themselves what is right or wrong, and their firstborn son then became a murderer, and things very quickly go downhill. And Genesis 6 says that, well, generations later, you reach the point that man has become so evil that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And God was grieved to see mankind suffering and inflicting suffering this way. Worldwide rebellion and selfishness, it was putting mankind on the path to global destruction. And so God, in his mercy, decided to give mankind a fresh start, to cause a worldwide flood, to wipe out all of mankind, except for Noah and his family. And then in Genesis chapter 9, God makes a promise. In verse 11, it says, "And I will establish my covenant with you. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of a flood. Neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth." And God said, "This is the token of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the clouds, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters shall no more come a flood to destroy all the earth. And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it, and I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature and all flesh that is on the earth." The rainbow is a symbol that God is not going to give up on mankind, that he's not going to wipe mankind out, that he is working an incredible plan through mankind, and he's committed to it. He's, even with you have human beings embracing all kinds of evil like they are today, God's not going to give up on humanity. Even though that plan requires the death of his son, Jesus Christ, he's willing to make that sacrifice for an evil, sinning mankind. Now, Satan, we talked about there being an evil spirit world. Satan spreads a lie about this, that, well, Christ died for your sins, you can be forgiven, therefore you don't have to keep God's law. It's done away with. Live however you like, do whatever you want, have whatever families and standards and marriage standards that you want. Decide for yourself what is good and what is evil, your truth. And he turns the grace of God into lasciviousness or lawlessness, as it says in Jude chapter 4. And, co-ops stealing the rainbow symbol, it's the same strategy. It's from the same source. It takes God's mercy and the symbol of God's mercy and uses it as a symbol for lawlessness. It says, well, do whatever you want, live however you want. God doesn't care. He's promised mercy for all. It's the same lie. But this rainbow promise, it's not simply ancient history. And we can look at Matthew 24. Christ makes very clear that this history of the flood is real and relevant. Matthew 24 and verse 37 to start with. Christ said, "But as in the days of Noah were, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that they were before the flood, where they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day Noah entered the ark, they knew not until the flood came and took them away, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be." It would be the same evil that we saw before the flood. And they were eating and drinking and giving in marriage. They had wrong use of marriage. And there was widespread immorality. And the thoughts of mankind were on evil continually, like we read in Genesis. And so we're going to reach the same situation. And in the same chapter, Jesus Christ describes the result in verses 21 and 22. And I'll just read this from the New International Version. It says, "For then there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, and never be equaled again. If those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened." So this unparalleled sin is going to lead to unparalleled suffering. Once again, man chooses to go his own ways of good and or his own ideas of good and evil, driving himself into depravity. And it's going to lead to a same time where a huge amount of people are wiped out. At that time, you're probably going to get many people thinking, well, is this the end? Is this extinction? Is mankind going to die in the ashes of nuclear fire? But if you look over now in Isaiah chapter 54, God reiterates this promise to Noah in an end time context. He reminds us of it. Isaiah chapter 54, verses 7 to 9, God says, "For a small moment I have forsaken you, but with great mercies will I gather you. In a little wrath, I hid my face from you a moment, but with everlasting kindness I will have mercy on you, says the Eternal, your Redeemer. For this is as the waters of Noah unto me. For as I have sworn that the waters of Noah should no more go over the earth, so have I sworn that I would not be wroth with you, nor rebuke you. For the mountain shall depart, and the hill shall be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from you, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed from you, says the Eternal, that has mercy on you." So the flood teaches us God is going to punish for all of this evil. I mean, that punishment comes from his mercy. How do you straighten out a society where children are being taught in their schools that they can be a cat if they want to? And he is going to intervene. The flood tells us that. But he's not going to abandon mankind to global sin or global suicide. Now, the rainbow teaches us that. And there's an even more specific promise in this passage. I mean, we won't read them, but verses 4 to 6 shows this is talking about the bride of Christ. This passage is more specifically addressed to his church. And there are many prophecies describing a worldwide rebellion in God's end time church. And we have our free booklet, Malachi's Message, that explains that. And even to understand America under attack, you need to understand the attack that came on God's church and how that happened. But there's a rebellion in God's church, and this is worse than what happened in the days of Noah. You know, the people in God's church, they were ignorant. Oh, sorry, people in the days of Noah were ignorant of God's truth. They were cut off from God's Holy Spirit. Well, God's church, they have access to that Spirit, to this truth, to what they need to succeed. In rebelling, well, they failed God. They failed to warn the world that they were supposed to warn. But just as God says that he doesn't give up on sinning mankind, he's not going to give up on his sinning church. And this whole passage talks about how if they repent, he will still welcome them into his family. We see in Revelation 10, this talks about this little book, this warning that God sends down to his sinning church. And it's associated in Revelation 10 with a rainbow. In Revelation 10 and verse 1, it says, "And I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face were as it were the sun, and his feet as pillars of fire." In his booklet, The Little Book, Mr. Flurry wrote, "The little book helps reveal God's mercy in these disastrous events, just as God did with the rainbow in Noah's time. The little book reveals the whole picture, bad news and incredible good news." And in that booklet, he calls the rainbow a symbol of God's mercy. And God invokes this symbol in context with church rebellion as well. He's not going to give up on his church. He's there warning and punishing, but in mercy, longing for repentance. And he is incredibly eager to forgive and welcome those that repent. Now we're in Revelation, we can look at Revelation chapter 4. I think the Bible, God calls his throne the mercy seat. He associates a lot of mercy with that throne. And we see in Revelation 4 and verse 13 the role that a rainbow plays even in God's throne room. And it says, and he that sat on was to look upon like a jasper and a sardine stone, and there was a rainbow round about the throne in sight like unto an emerald. You know, this throne room is full of light and beauty and colour. There's a glorious picture here. And God himself, he created the laws of light and optics. I mean, he could have created us to see in black and white. I know there are parts of the electromagnetic spectrum we can't see, but he could have, it's perfectly possible God could have said black and white, well, that's enough, and you can get through life with that. But he creates in beauty and splendor and color, and he surrounds himself with that. Mr. Armstrong wrote, I think this was in a coworker letter, he said, do you fully realize it? God is not the author of ugliness, but of beauty, not of unsightliness or drab, colorless, depressing surroundings, but of magnificence, inspiration, culture, not the source of giver or cheap of cheapness or inferiority, but of quality and character, not of darkness, but of light and brilliance. He writes, God himself dwells in brilliant splendor. From his throne in heaven, brilliant lightning flashes forth. It is resplendent in beauty, brilliance, and glory beyond description. Ezekiel 1 describes God bringing this same beauty with him as he travels. And Ezekiel 1 describes this fiery brilliance, and verse 28 kind of concludes this whole chapter. And it says, as the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Eternal. And when I saw it, I fell upon my face and heard a voice of one that spoke. That's the, you know, God surrounds himself as he travels with this rainbow and this brilliant glory. And then we can go right towards the end of the Bible, Revelation chapter 21. That describes this same brilliant, God bringing this same brilliant glory down to earth in the form of New Jerusalem. You know, we can read about this and see a picture of this starting in, we'll start in verse 18. It says, in the building of the wall, it was of jasper, and the city was of pure gold, like unto clear glass. And the foundations of the wall were garnished with all manner of precious stones. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, a third chalcedony, a fourth emerald. And the names used in the King James, you know, there's all kinds of, well, how good of a translation is this from the original Greek? And, you know, what colors were these actually? And different commentaries have different ideas. But what is crystal clear is there's a huge variety of color that God is used, that God describes in these different gemstones. This picture of New Jerusalem is filled with light and beauty and color, just like the rainbow. And in Isaiah 54, we won't turn back there, but right after God, you know, he reiterates his promise to Noah, he's promising mercy on his church that repents. And he says, well, behold, I will lay your stones with fair colors, and then starts talking about many of these different colored gems. And he compares that to the beauty of the church that he's going to bring, or the beauty he's going to bring to the church. So God, his throne room is filled with this color and beauty, and he wants to take this same glory and colorful brilliance out into the universe. His goal is to reproduce himself, to create more beings capable of creating the kind of glory and brilliance. Mr. Armstrong writes that God needed millions or billions of perfect and righteous beings governed by his government to complete in beauty, majesty, and glory not only the other planets of the solar system, but in our Milky Way and the countless other galaxies of the limitless, vast universe. That's the vision that is bound up with a rainbow, truly. It's a vision that Satan attacks. It's a terrible attack, but it's a vision of a glorious purpose through mankind. You know, God is not going to give up on this project. He's making the greatest sacrifice he could make. And you know, this rainbow, it's a sign of God's mercy, something that mankind unfortunately fails to understand, a mercy that frees us from sin. And that is what he's working to do. You can read more about that in our free booklet, The Incredible Human Potential. We'll be very happy to send that to you. You can email us if you want to order that, know more about that, td@thetrumpet.com. or you can give us a call on 1-866-930-3024.